Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav, another signature event of the PGA Tour schedule, the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill, where Rex, you are at the moment, I believe, in the dining area. But first, before we get into that, I did want to start with the biggest news of the past 48 hours since last we talked. LIV officially withdrawing its bid for official world golf ranking points after getting denied last fall. Rex, first of all, what's the reasoning behind the move?
I wouldn't even want to venture into Greg Norman's head about what the reasoning was. And before we start, I want to give such a huge shout out. Like, I can't do the emojis, hands with the blessings and the whole nine yards, but Nosferatu actually answered a question you had on the pod about last week about Joaquin Niemann and where he would be as far as top 100 in the world come PGA Championship time. So Nosferatu, I want to thank you. And for on behalf of Lav and all of our listeners for doing the math that we don't want to and aren't qualified to do.
I feel like Nosferatu, too, is going to have to expand his arsenal. He's clearly very good at the official world golf ranking.
Can you do
data golf? Do you mind doing like data golf projections as well, since that seems to be a more valid measure at the moment? But yes, to answer the original question that we had in the podcast, Joaquin Niemann would have fallen just outside projected the top 100 for the PGA Championship, thus kind of outside that official, unofficial ranking list for the PGA of America. It's hard to imagine they would have overlooked him for that one, though.
To go back to your original question, why did they pick now? Why did Greg Norman pick now to sort of withdraw from this fight that they felt like from the very beginning, from even before LIV Golf started, this was something he was planting his flag on. This felt like the hill he wanted to die on. And I think one of us actually mentioned it maybe last week that it seemed like a waste of energy and resources. At this point, it wasn't going to happen. Like, you could continue to scream into the void, but no one was going to hear you. And my guess is that someone close to Norman or Norman himself figured out that, okay, my energy is better served going after where I can possibly make some progress. And that's the four major championships. And that's what this is going to come down to. It's going to come down to the four majors actually deciding we want to make sure we get the best field in golf. And at what point does that become a problem? Does it become a tipping point that we're not getting that because we're overlooking these players that are playing LIV Golf? So it kind of puts the ball in their court. And we have seen, at least as on behalf of Augusta National, on behalf of the PGA of America, they are willing to reach out to players that they feel like should be in their championship. So I think it's a good move, actually, on Norman's part.
You obtained the memo that Greg Norman sent to members of the LIV Golf League, and he called it, quote, enormous efforts they have been making over the past year and a half to try and get official world golf ranking points for the LIV golfers. First of all, the official world golf ranking's biggest beef with LIV Golf was the fact that it was a closed shop. And LIV's answer to that was basically creating this promotions event for three players plus the Asian Tour Order of Merit winner, which this year was Andy Ogletree, who's now on LIV. Then they added what was essentially a hand-picked team, John Rahm's team, where he also had Tyrrell Hatton, a top 20 player in the world. That's it. Those were all of the quote-unquote enormous efforts that were made to try and follow or comply with the OWGR criteria. So I thought that was a little bit disingenuous that Greg Norman said in that memo. I'm with you that it does leave kind of two major questions here. One, as you mentioned, is the player access to the major championships. It does provide, I think, some context now to the recent war path that a Bryson DeChambeau have been on, a Taylor Gooch has been on, Joaquin Niemann's been on. I think it makes more sense now, because if you say it over and over again, you're basically just trying to discredit an existing institution like the official world golf ranking, so that it just becomes kind of accepted that this is no longer a viable solution. It's no longer an accurate measure of who the best players in the world are. We talked about it earlier this week on Golf Today. The official world golf ranking is fair in the sense that it's measuring what it's supposed to be measuring, but it's clearly flawed and it's clearly now inaccurate. It is not a direct representation or a good representation of who the best players in the world are. I think that's kind of indisputable. What is going to be interesting, Rex, with the major championships is what happens when this issue reaches critical mass. Because right now we're arguing over Taylor Gooch, who at 32 years old does not have a top 10 in a major championship. We're arguing over like a Lucas Herbert or a Dean Burmester, who are not all inside the top 100 currently on the official world golf ranking, but not yet exempt into all the major championships. That's not good enough. Something has to change for the majors to compel them, like a Joaquin Neiman has done over the past 4 months, to actually make some changes to their qualification criteria.
Well, and I would push back a little bit on what you just said about the official world golf ranking. No, it's not an accurate representation of where we are in the world of golf right now. I would say largely not of their making. I mean, the official world golf ranking did not tell the players to leave the PGA Tour and join LIV, or tell the PIF to invest all this money in LIV. So I want to be
really... very bad timing that the OWGR did that refresh, right, in 2022.
Yes.
The same exact year that LIV launched and kind of torpedoed the entire pro golf landscape.
Yes. And I had a bit of an adolescent moment yesterday with the editor of ours, who suggested I do kind of a Q&A similar to what you did when we did the golf ball rollout. And my thoughts, my feelings on that are, well, that's kind of cheap and easy journalism. And I didn't particularly want to do it, but I did it because I'm a team player. And then once I got done, it was a lot of heavy lifting. You had to look into a lot of different things. And I felt like it, at least in my mind, it cleared some things up. So to answer your questions, the reason why Greg did this is I think he got tired of pounding his head against that wall that wasn't going to budge. I mean, the wall was simply going to be there and he was going to end up with a cracked skull. So he had to move on to something else. So the question is, what else do you have to do? And look to Joaquin Neiman for the path forward. I would say if there's other LIV players, and Bryson is a great example, because I was talking with someone from his camp just today about this, and I was completely on board with him. Like, he wasn't justifying Bryson should or should not be in the major championships, but he said after next year, his exemptions run out. And he goes, do you really want, are you really going to tell me that Bryson DeChambeau shouldn't be in the major championships based on his current play on LIV Golf? And I said, no, I absolutely cannot do that. And the major championships will be less without a Bryson DeChambeau. But Joaquin Neiman has created the path forward. If you really want to get in, Taylor Gooch, there's qualifying. If you really want to get in, Taylor Gooch, you can go play all of these other events around the world. If you really want to get in, Taylor Gooch, you kind of keep your mouth shut and you do the right things on the golf course instead of running your mouth.
I do think it is interesting. So we're recording this podcast on Wednesday. And on Wednesday is when the RNA unveiled their qualification criteria for this year's Open Championships. And so the majors have been abundantly clear what they think of LIV Golf. Augusta does not mention LIV Golf when they invited Joaquin Neiman. Neither does the PGA of America. There is no special category for LIV players at this year's Open, but there is a new wrinkle that there's a top five from an international federation list that does include and take into account tours such as the Asian Tour, which is where a lot of LIV players have been playing. Dean Burmester, David Pooge are among those who have played other events and gotten through the Open qualifying series and will be playing at Royal Troon. Taylor Gooch, if you want to be in the major championships, you can either qualify or you can go play until your heart's content on the Asian Tour, as long as it does not conflict with LIV tournaments. I think, Rex, an interesting question where we go from here is, what does this mean now for LIV's format, where they've kind of been doing these dual roles of having individual titles and team championships all running kind of concurrently? But now that it's at least official that this is not going to matter in terms of future OWGR participation, where does this leave LIV?
Well, and you said primarily the world rankings issues with LIV Golf was promotion access.
Close shop.
That type of thing.
Close shop.
And it was to a certain degree. And clearly the four on, four off, which is what essentially they did this year, wasn't good enough for them. And from LIV Golf's perspective, they didn't feel like they were given enough guidance. Like, what would have been a good enough number? Eight on, eight off each year? 10, 12? Like, give me a number, a percentage, whatever.
Seems like 25% is what the established tours
Yeah.
do. The churn, if you will.
Churn rate, if you want to go to that. The other part of the equation, which you did not mention, it is this, which the competition side of this. And even though that wasn't as big of a concern, our colleague, Amy Lynch, actually brought this up. I think it's been relatively recently on Golf Today, with the idea that if you have two players coming down the stretch who are on the same team, one player is financially motivated as a member of his team to help another player out as much as he possibly can. That is an issue. You can sit and pretend like it's not. And I think the world ranking made it clear. Peter Dawson, in an interview with the Associated Press last year, made it clear that was an issue. And I keep going back to the PGA Tour suffered kind of the same consequences, if you want to put it that way, when they moved the Zurich Classic to a team event. And I remember even in the moment, the PGA Tour saying that, okay, if we don't do a four ball, a foursomes element, if we just keep it four ball, so everyone's playing their own ball, so we can calculate exactly what they did, could we be part of the world ranking then. They do not get world ranking points. And there was a very, very hard no. But that still doesn't work because you have two guys working in unison together when it should be a competition. So those were the two things that the world ranking weren't going to bend on. Everything else, they could work around. They made it clear, like mathematically, we can work around 54 holes. We can work around short fields. We can work around no cuts. That's not a problem. It was those two issues that they got caught up on. One of the things that I kind of dug into with the Q&A was, is there another ranking? And you mentioned Data Golf that we could go to. And I had never really, I hadn't spent that much time, to be honest with you, looking at Data
Great
Golf.
Website.
It is a really good website. It's kind of eye-opening. There's a lot of really good information there. And they do include Live Golf. And I kind of went down. I think when you look at Joaquin, I think Joaquin is maybe top. He's 12th as opposed to 72nd in the world, I think, in the official world golf ranking. And most Live players are much, much higher than where they are right now. Interestingly, Brooks Koepka is not. Brooks Koepka is lower on Data Golf than he is in the official world.
He hasn't played
golf
particularly well over the past 9 months.
That's true. The other one, but it also has its flaws. Like the one that stood out to me, Data Golf uses scores and results from the PGA Tour champions, which means that Steve Stricker is ranked
70. Steve Stricker's a world beater.
You can't have that. They also had like Ricky Fowler, who is 30 something in the official world golf ranking and outside the top 100 on Data Golf. So there are
he hasn't
some
played well since his win in Detroit.
It's a smaller window, I guess, is the problem. And I am conditioned, and maybe this is a me problem, not a Data Golf problem. But I think when you start getting reactionary so much to the point that what have you done in the last, pick a number, 4 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, I don't think that's a good judge of talent either, because a guy can just get hot. That doesn't mean he's a world-class player.
So as it relates to what this leaves for Liv, now that its format has been denied by the official world golf ranking, they're not even going to pursue it. If I were Liv, I would lean into the team element headlong. That would be my avenue to try and create an even more compelling product. I've covered college golf. You covered college golf ages ago. They call it a team competition. It isn't really. You're adding up the scores. You play five, you count four, and that's your team total at the end of the day. If I'm Liv, I'm incorporating way more match play. I'm doing medal match play. You've covered the Liv finale at Doral at the end of the year. Like, that's probably the best Liv tournament there is because there's match play. People like to see it. And I think you can easily imagine a scenario where you keep the best Liv teams that have been established, plus you add some of the top PGA Tour teams, assuming there is some sort of merger and there is some sort of cohesion, and they can do battle 4 to 6 times a year. It probably doesn't work 14 times a year. It probably doesn't work 10 times a year. But 4 to 6 times a year, I think that could even be a more compelling product. There was a little bit more news also, Rex, with the President's Cup team, specifically the international President's Cup captain, Mike Weir, saying there will not be any Liv players on his team when they do battle at Royal Montreal later this year. On its face, not surprising. President's Cup is a PGA Tour entity, but what do you think it means for the competition that, just like a Quail Hollow 2 years ago, no Liv players will be in attendance?
I was on that conference call with Mike Weir yesterday, right before I came on to join you and George Savrikas on Golf Today. And I will say that the way Mike is looking at this, and by comparison to what Trevor Immelman faced at Quail Hollow, Trevor was sort of slapped across the face with Liv Golf right in the middle of his team coming together. Like it happened in real time for Trevor. And I think we've talked about this before that, man, like he was put in a really, really difficult position. I think I've told this story about actually texting Trevor, you know, what are you going to do about Louis? Who, and the response is, has Louis joined Liv Golf? And I had to inform him that, yes, he did. Like, I'm the one that's telling him that you just lost one of your best players. It was very uncomfortable for me, and I can only imagine how uncomfortable it must have been for Trevor. Mike talked about this a little bit yesterday. It won't be that impactful, at least in the short term, because he probably won't have
in
to deal
in terms of
those,
disruption. You know, he's not going to have the disruption throughout the process.
That rat-a-tat-tat right across the face. Like, every 2 days I'm having to talk about a player who's not going to be around, and I needed that player around really, really badly. However, there is the other side of it, that he is still without Louis Oosthuizen. He is still without Cam Smith. He's still without Mark Leishman. Like, he still has these holes in his lineup to fill. It's not surprising, and I didn't even consider it newsworthy when it happened, because of course he wouldn't. It's a PGA Tour product, and we all know where we are right now. That could change between now and Royal Montreal, although I doubt it. It doesn't seem like we're heading in that direction. But No, all right. I didn't want to do this. So, because I hate trafficking in stupid rumors, because I just came off the range and it's nothing but stupid rumors.
Let's mark the time. Go ahead.
Yeah. Mark the time. So there is a rumor going around among players and agents and caddies on the range that there's going to be some sort of conference call on Friday morning here at Bay Hill. Friday morning before the field tees off. That is unprecedented. I've never seen it in all of my time covering the PGA Tour. I haven't been able to confirm that, so I don't even believe that there is going
conference
to be a
call conference. Among whom?
Players and tour officials, which is, again, it's unheard of, unprecedented. Never heard it in nearly three decades of covering the tour. And one of the rumors that they're going to address is the idea that somehow they would allow the LIV players into TPC next week. And like, I even ran this by a couple of LIV players.
What?
And it was laughable.
What?
Yes, that's exactly the response I expected from you. So the idea here, and again, these are all unsubstantiated rumors. I hate trafficking in these.
Love these.
Well, they're awful. They're awful because there's nothing to this. I can't stress this enough. This is wild, wild speculation. Please no one tweet this out. Let's just keep it amongst ourselves and we can be safe with this, because the idea is a couple of things could possibly happen in this meeting on Friday morning. Again, completely unprecedented, and I can't find one player who can confirm that because they haven't gotten any memo about a possible conference call on Friday morning. But one of them is, yes, that the LIV players would be allowed back into the field next week at the Players' Championship. Never mind the logistics that the entire LIV tour is in Hong Kong and it would be kind of tough to get them to TPC Sawgrass in time. Never mind that you already have a full field at TPC Sawgrass, and what are you going to kick players out? We're going to expand 156 and not finish. Like, there's so many stupid things. The other rumor that I heard is that there's a done deal. They want to announce that, yes, it's imminent. Like, we have a deal with the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. Everything's going to be fixed in the game of golf. The other rumor I had is there's going to be no deal. Everything is called off. The reason I traffic in all of this nonsense is because if you're Mike Weir, you cannot get caught up in those weeds. You won't be able to captain. You won't be able to lead. You won't be able to create any kind of team that would have any kind of continuity. His job is hard enough, man. Like, we've talked to him. Well, I'm sure we'll talk more before the year is out about everything the internationals haven't been able to do in that event. But the one thing Mike Weir can control is the narrative at this point. And yes, I'm sure he'd love to have Louis, and he'd love to have Mark, and he'd love to have Cam on that team. But right now, that's just not realistic.
But I think what is realistic...
Make sure you clip that. Do the time, just so we can send that out on social, just so that I look awful.
I think what is realistic, though, Rex, is assuming that this deal continues to drag on and the talks continue to be ongoing, that by the time we do get to Royal Montreal and there is no resolution yet, he is going to be asked incessantly about fielding what is not the best team. About, he could have Cam Smith, he could have Joaquin Neiman, he could have any number of players in addition to Tom Kim and Minwoo Lee and Hideki Matsuyama. Like, there actually is potential for the international side playing at home to be quite stout.
Home.
At home in Canada. But to have a more formidable challenge to the American team. And so, absent of that, I think this is just kind of a sad reminder of how broken the top level is right now. You mentioned the Players' Championship next week. That is no longer the strongest field in golf. The President's Cup is no longer the best Americans versus the best international players. On the LIV side, we just talked about it. They abandoned their bid for points. They're basically playing 54 holes without any meaning or historical context. But the biggest loser in all this is the fans. The sense of urgency that you and I have, that people in the media have, that golf fans have, of all wanting to bring the game back together again, does not seem to be shared, that sense of urgency, by the top levels of management on both the PGA Tour and the PIF side. Now, perhaps those rumors are correct. Perhaps on Friday there will be conference calls. Perhaps the whole thing deal will be off. Perhaps it'll be saved. Perhaps it'll be playing at TPC Sawgrass. Who knows? But I think yesterday's reminder about the President's Cup was just it's an indictment of where we are right now, where everything just kind of stinks.
No, to your point, it is absolutely 100% not sustainable. And everyone, it's interesting this week being on the range here at Bay Hill and also having to kind of be in contact with players in Hong Kong on LIV Golf. You mentioned the memo that Greg Norman sent out. I had to send a couple of text messages to players in the middle of the night. Luckily, one of them was just coming home from dinner, and we started sort of communicating back and forth. And everybody says the same thing. Like, if you can find one unifying goal or one unifying note in all of this nightmare. It's that, yeah, we can't keep going down this path. This path is bad for everyone, except for a very, very small sliver of top players who are getting paid and getting paid very, very well. Everyone else is suffering. The fans, but especially the corporate sponsors,
the media. Especially the fans.
I would say those players who are just outside of that upper echelon, like everyone is suffering from this, and it's making the product worse and worse by the day. So I can't imagine, and I keep coming back to the idea that there's so many, I was talking with a player this morning on the putting green, and there's so many big issues to tackle. And one of the ones is, okay, how do the live players come back? Because that seems to be one of the big stumbling blocks in coming to some sort of agreement. And I will give this player credit, and he's like, I don't like many players who went and joined Live Golf. I don't like what they did. He goes, but I understand why we need to have them back. And I think eventually that sets in for everyone, but it's clear that it's going to take some time.
What's the mood on the range, Rex, or on the putting green? Is anyone actually talking about the tournament? Does anyone actually care this is a signature event? Does anyone actually care the Masters is upcoming, or is it all just kind of this existential crisis that pro golf seems to find itself in at the moment?
Well, it's funny. The player I was talking to this morning started the conversation with, what do you think of this world ranking stuff? And my mind immediately went to, because all we did yesterday was talking about Live Golf withdrawing their bid. That's what I thought he was talking about. He was actually referencing Will Zalatoris' sort of dismissive comments about the world ranking when we asked him yesterday when he was in the media center, where he did sort of the prototypical PGA Tour player thing and shrugged his shoulders. It is what it is. Like, it's clear that even players on this side who are benefiting from what's going on to a certain degree in the world ranking, because they're moving up exponentially from where they probably would have been had Live Golf not existed, even they recognize this is not the right way to do it. And no one is pretending like they have all the answers on this one. And again, I keep going back to, in the short term, this is up to the major championships to make this right. That might not be fair. It might not be something they want, but this is what you've been given. This is how you have to lead the game, because it's clear it's not going to come from the official World Golf Ranking or the PGA Tour or certainly Live Golf. Like, to fix this problem and to make sure that at least in the short term that you get the top players together when it matters the most at the major championships, that they have to make the decision to sort of take the blinders off and realize that we can't look at them differently just because they joined another tour.
All right, Rex, this week is the fourth signature event of the PGA Tour season. Kind of a mixed bag of winners so far, whether it was Chris Kirk, you also had Hideki Matsuyama, you also had Wyndham Clark win the shortened event at Pebble Beach that you covered as well. Is it time that the bold-faced names step up? Do you think it's going to happen this week, the second leg of the Florida Swing?
Oh, yeah. No, I would say it's past time, to be honest with you. That's kind of the column I'm writing today, because I'm taking a bit of a dive into, okay, this is what the tour created, and this is how they wanted to do it. Because these signature events, aka designated events, are no longer mandatory, these are all the perks and the prize money and the extra points that they gave players to convince them to play in these events. And by and large, at least through the first four, you've got pretty good participation. There's just one guy who's qualified who's not in the field this week. It's Tony Finau. So you have 69 players. But by and large, participation has been pretty good. So you've got the first half of this right. Now it's up to the players to sort of deliver the second half. Because as you pointed out, and look, you and I both are big fans of Chris Kirk and the redemption story, and both of us have written our own versions of that story. I will point to Wyndham Clark and be a little disappointed, not because it's Wyndham Clark, but because you only got 54 holes. And the PGA
Tour could have been an epic showdown with Ludvig Åberg. It really could have.
And they had their Sunday. Like, this is Sunday without football at Pebble Beach. If you get the right weather conditions, and it's an outdoor sport, and I'm not blaming anyone at Ponte Vedra because we got some sort of once-in-a-century storm at Pebble Beach that week, but it's just really, really bad timing. And even Hideki, who certainly in Asia is a star, you can't tell me that he moved the needle. The highest-ranked player to win one of these signature events was Wyndham, and he was at 10 in the world. That's not what they need. They need to be better than this.
It is interesting. We ran a graphic on Golf Today earlier this week, kind of contrasting the start to the 2024 season as opposed to 2023. And I think 2023 was certainly clouded in that run-up to the Masters, because you had John Rahm winning four times, culminating with the Masters title. You had Scottie Scheffler winning twice, including the Players' Championship. And so when you have those top players playing at such a high level, I think it kind of overlooks the rest of the season, which kind of petered out. Neither of those two players, who were the two front runners for Player of the Year, ended up winning post-April 10th or whatever it was. So when you look at the start of this season, I think the full field events have actually been pretty good. They've served their purpose. They've launched some careers if it comes to Jake Knapp or resurrects careers in terms of Grayson Murray. Last week's winner, Austin Eckroat, is a highly accomplished amateur player who's now finding his footing as a pro. I think that's been very, very successful. Where it has been lacking, but we haven't been far off, has been in these signature events. We weren't far off from having a Sahith or a Jordan Spieth win at the Century. We weren't far off from having a Ludvig Åberg. I mean, Wyndham Clark is reigning U.S. Open champ. It's not like that was a disappointment, but you could have had a showdown in that final round as well. We weren't far off at Riviera, which was stolen by Hideki Matsuyama with that final round 62, the lowest score ever shot to win the tournament at Riviera, from having a Xander Schauffele or Patrick Cantlay or Will Zalatoris win that title. I'm with you. I think it's going to happen this week. You look at the leaderboard last year, it may have been won by a player who maybe most golf fans weren't intimately familiar with Kurt Kitayama. But you look at the rest of that leaderboard, it was Scotty, it was Jordan, it was Rory, all in the mix to try and get it. And I think that's the signature event at its best. When you have the best players vying for the title, and whoever plays the best that week gets it, even if it is a player a kind of unheralded like Kurt Kitayama.
No, you put words in my mouth. I'm not guaranteeing it's going to happen. I said it has to happen. Like, I truly believe for this experiment to work that it has to happen eventually. For the reasons you just pointed out, Bay Hill seems to bring out the best in a lot of the top players. I look at the way Rory played last week at PGA National. He's played well here in the past. So there's plenty of reasons to be optimistic. And to your point about the full field events, and I said this to someone earlier in the week, the full field events are exactly what we thought they were going to be. They were going to be stepping stones for players who weren't in these elevated events, these special events, to sort of move their way up. And that's what we've got. So I will give the tour credit on many, many fronts as they've tried to build this new schedule and sort of deal with this moving target that is fighting LIV Golf, that they've created something that has the potential to be good. It's just not there yet.
Rex, I know you loathe the home game. You don't loathe the tournament. You like the tournament, but you loathe the idea of a home game. How has it gone so far this week, and what are your plans? What do you intend to focus on for the rest of Bay Hill week?
No, I need to offer a mea culpa because I had a friend of mine yesterday kind of call me on my BS. He called me out on the idea that you're complaining about driving 45 minutes to work and driving 45 minutes back to work once a
yes.
week. I mean, once a year. You have to do that once a year. He has to do it every day. And I was like, all right, fair enough. You got me on that one. Like, I live a pampered life. I don't know what you to tell me. I'm soft. I'm like Charmin. Like, I'm sorry. And for anyone I've offended, I know that no one wants to hear that it takes me 45 minutes to get to the golf course to eat my free lunch. I know how that sounds.
But it's cold and it's not that good.
It's a little bit better this year. You know, the bigger deal, and I'm gonna call people out like on the mat on this one. I had to rustle up upwards of 20 tickets for people this year to Bay Hill. 20. I got
it's a
bunch of
signature event. Do they even have 20 leftover tickets?
No, they don't. That's the problem. And the tickets they were willing to offer me as a media member were not many. They were two, to be quite specific. So I'm having to call favors in from caddies and players. I'm having to do a lot of work. So the problem is I got a bunch of drunks from my neighborhood who want to come out on Friday and just walk around and get drunk, which is why that conference call that I know isn't going to happen, because very much ruined a day I was looking forward to. So, and then on top of that, I had a group of caddies. This is going to throw you for a loop. Would you have told me that there's three caddies in this week's field caddying for players who all played college golf at Houston? That one kind of blew me away. I would not have taken the under on that one. I wouldn't have saw it coming. Anyway, the Houston guys wanted to go to the Houston UCF game. Didn't even realize Houston's number one in the nation. Good for Houston. Good for you guys. So
what
I
sport?
Had basketball.
Huh?
Yeah.
The more you know.
Yeah. The more you know. Anyway, I was able to even round those up. So I got a lot on my plate this week on top of just doing the day job. So that's why I say it's my worst week.
That was a terrific mea culpa, and we do appreciate it. And I can't think of a more rousing endorsement to make sure you go check out Rex's work, as well as Brentley Romine, our colleague, who will also be on site this week at Bay Hill. You guys know the drill. Make sure to go nbcsports.com/golf for all the latest news, notes, commentary, and features. Arnold Palmer Invitational. Make sure you are like frantically refreshing the homepage on Friday to see if all of Rex's unsubstantiated rumors somehow come to fruition. Fingers crossed, it will at least give us something to talk about. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. We'll be back either on Sunday night or, if Rex is feeling frisky, early Monday from my backyard, site of the Players Championship, for a full recap, and then we'll spin it ahead to the fifth major. I believe it's still the fifth major in golf. We'll debate that as well. Thank you guys, as always, for listening. Have a great rest of the week.
Reckless speculation.